I will disclose that I have a little bit of a cold, so hopefully I can get through this. So again, my name is Stacey Robison. I work for a company called Communicate Health, and for the last 4+ years, I've had the privilege of working on a lot of projects, but one of which for the U.S. Office of Disease Prevention and Health Promotion, or ODPHP. And we've been looking at this idea of how can we create a consumer health website that's easy to use for people with more limited literacy skills. So we've been exploring this, and we recently wrote up what we learned along with some recommendations into a guide, which is called Health Literacy Online, Writing and Designing Easy to Use Health Websites. I have no disclosures. I feel like that should be like a match.com screening question or something. No relationships to disclose. So I'll flash this URL up a couple times, but this is where you can find the guide at health.gov/healthliteracyonline. And I wanted to start with just a couple of statistics. I don't think this is news to anyone in the room. These are sort of the more recent ones from the Pew Internet and American Life Project. But I think it kind of helps set the context for what I'm going to talk about today. So we are online. I think this number is even higher. These are from June 2009. But 74% of American adults are online. No shocker here, 95% of teenagers are online. And what are we doing online? We know that we're looking for health information. 8 in 10 internet users, which translates to a little over 60% of American adults, are looking for health information online. And this is kind of interesting. 6 in 10 say their most recent search had an impact on their health or the way they care for someone else. So not only are we looking for health information, but we're using it. And at the same time, we know we struggle with complex health information. And as many as half of US adults have limited literacy skills, and as many as 9 out of 10 American adults have limited health literacy skills. And this 9 in 10 number comes from the recent National Assessment of Adult Literacy that found that only 12% of American adults actually have proficient health literacy skills. And according to the US Department of Health and Human Services, you actually need proficient health literacy skills in order to navigate our current healthcare system and make healthcare decisions. So in other words, about 9 in 10 adults don't have the health literacy skills they need to stay healthy and access our healthcare system. We also have a lot of older adults who are going online more and more, and we know that that's going to impact, their age is going to impact the way that they understand and use health information online. So what does this mean? We have a lot of information online. We have people looking for information online. That's a good thing. As public health professionals, we're putting more and more of our information and our services, sometimes entirely online. So it means that we have an obligation to sort of step back and take a look at how we're presenting this information online and how well people can really use it. So there are a couple different factors that determine how easily someone can find and use information on the internet. One is just access to computers. Another is literacy skills, ability to read and understand the text on the page. Complexity of information on the site, and we know that sort of on the spectrum of complexity, I would put health information pretty high up there. And then the usability of the website. And I just want to emphasize this before I go any further, that we know more often than not it's a poorly designed website more than it is the skills of the user that contribute to users' challenges online. So, you know, I think that Dr. Pleasant sort of had a similar framing, but as we think about health literacy and talk about health literacy, you know, the onus is on us as healthcare professionals and public health professionals to communicate clearly, and it's the same when we design websites as it is if we're communicating with the patient or the public. So, the guide. It comes from research from a website called healthfinder.gov. And on healthfinder.gov is a feature called the Quick Guide to Healthy Living. And this is where we try to build prevention content for people with more limited literacy skills. And it now has, I believe, over 70 different topics. We tested it with over 750 web users. This was over a period of about 5 years. We used an iterative design process, so We did initial testing, we built a prototype, we tested the prototype with users, we built a new prototype, we tested that, eventually we launched the site, and we're continually doing user testing. A lot of those users have limited health literacy skills, and I'll talk about that in a second. Those are a couple of the measures that we looked at. So we looked at engagement. That was really key for us because we were providing health promotion or prevention information, and you sort of have an inherently less motivated user group because these aren't people looking for sort of to diagnose something or looking up their medication. We're trying to talk to them about proactive things they can do to stay healthy. So engagement was really key for us. We also looked at self-efficacy, acceptability, and applicability. And because we were doing sort of widespread usability testing, something like the Realm or the TOEFLA or an individual test of health literacy didn't really make sense, and we weren't actually able to administer that one-on-one before each usability test. So we used a proxy measure for health literacy. We used high school education or below the poverty threshold, and had not searched for health information online in the past year. And we also really tried to recruit from community settings. And we found that this worked pretty well for us. Again, you know, it's not a perfect measure, but as a proxy to get who we needed to get, it worked pretty well. So what did we find? I'm gonna go through a couple findings, and these are all in the guide along with pretty detailed strategies on how to compensate for some of this. And I'll also just say that a lot of what we found about users with more limited literacy skills or limited experience using the web, these are all things that we do when we use the web. I know I do, so it's not really just specific to this population. So they have a hard time scanning. A lot of times when we approach a website, users with more experience using the web will exhibit what I call an F pattern. I don't know how many people are familiar with the F pattern. But it basically looks like an F. So they'll focus on the left column of the screen, and usually they'll read all the way across on the top. So they start off sort of strong, and then as you move down the page, they kind of drop off, and they're only reading, you know, maybe a header here, a header here. And it actually forms, if you use eye tracking, it actually forms more or less a capital letter F. We didn't see this at all with these users with more limited literacy skills. They had a hard time scanning. They would skip. And what triggered skipping for us was a little bit surprising. So more than three lines of text, and this wasn't three sentences, this was actually three lines together in a paragraph triggered skipping. So did numbers, percentages, things like that. And when these users would skip, instead of just landing in the next, you know, maybe the next section down or the beginning of the next paragraph, they would land in the middle of the page, possibly even in the middle of a paragraph. A lot of times they would start clicking on links instead of reading the content. So what to do to overcome this? Bulleted lists, short sentences, if you can, no more than three lines of text really helps. These users also had a hard time searching for information. We saw users, you know, prefer to scroll through a list of 50 items rather than type something into the search box. So you want to include multiple options, you know, different ways for people to search. So if they have a search box, maybe you have certain categories, and maybe also have an A to Z list. Give people some options so they don't always have to use the search box. And definitely compensate for misspellings if you do have a search box. That's pretty key. This is kind of fuzzy. This is a screenshot from the Quick Guide to Healthy Living. This is one way that we did our search for different health topics. So we also have an A to Z search and a search box option. So focusing on the center of the screen, a lot of users with more limited experience on the web have a really, what we call a narrow field of view. So they're not looking left or right or necessarily forward or back. And content, especially content in the right-hand margin, they will skip over. They assume it's an advertisement. So I wouldn't recommend putting, you know, any key content in the right-hand margin. And these users rarely scrolled. So that's something else to keep in mind. So you want to keep your key content above the fold. I don't know if people know what the fold means. It's basically an old newspaper term. But when you're looking, you know, when you go to a website that loads onto your screen, basically what you can see on the screen without scrolling down, that's above the fold. So you're going to want to keep your key content in that center spot above the fold. So again, these users are really easily overwhelmed. And I just want to emphasize that, you know, plain language is not enough. So just having good content written in plain language, if you chunk it all together and you put it in the middle of the screen, it's still going to be really overwhelming for users to read. So again, really short sentences, bullets, lots of white space. A limited working memory. These users are sort of on information overload. So a lot of times they're concentrating and using a lot of energy just to read the word on the page, and so they'll then have forgotten sort of what came before, or where they were going, or what the purpose of sort of their search was. And so if you can, try to create sort of standalone sections of text that can function independently. And then a lot of visual cues and different cues to orient users where they are on the site. This is an example from, again, from the Quick Guide to Healthy Living. We have a tool called My Health Finder, where users put in their age and sex, and then they get tailored results. And we, after a lot of user testing, found that we actually needed to sort of remind users of their search. So they would put in their parameters, and they'd click search, and then they would get a page of results. And a lot of times, it was really helpful when we started posting this reminder message. Excuse me, to remind them of what they searched for. So little cues like that can be really helpful. Excuse me. So finally, users prefer simple navigation. They're not using breadcrumbs. I don't know how many of you even use breadcrumbs. I don't always use breadcrumbs. Not using drop-down menus, things like that. We found that a linear navigation worked really well with these users. It's not the only way to set up a website, but it was pretty effective. A lot of back and next buttons. A strong left-hand navigation was also helpful. So this is a screenshot from the Quick Guide to Healthy Living. So we used a tab format. So there's a tab on the top. They know they're in the basics. We just have two sections for each topic. It's basics and take action. And then we use a linear navigation, which means in this section you can see there were just two pages. You're either on page one or two and you go forward or back. This is just a quick example of what I mean by sort of a strong left-hand navigation with a cue. This is the new healthcare.gov site, but this user is in the top five things to know, and it's clearly visible. There's not a giant red arrow. I put that in there, but it is highlighted a different color, so the user knows where they are on the website. So these are the six strategies that we talk a lot about in the guide, and I went through a lot of them just now. I want to talk just really briefly about two in a little more detail. The first is write actionable health content. And again, I think, you know, this is where, again, the plain language really isn't enough. When we talk about health information, users really want to know, just tell me what to do. They want the action steps. And so what does that look like on a website? We usually try to start with the behavior and then describe it. And if we can, sort of break it down into specific or smaller action steps that are a little bit easier. If there's things that users can do right away to get started, making a list, circling a date on the calendar, something like that, that can really help with self-efficacy. And then you want to make the case without being overly negative. But I think by making the case, you know, I think that sort of gets at the why they should do it, because I do think that's helpful. We have a tendency to give people way too much information, I think, but one piece that is helpful is that sort of scientific literacy concept, that why is the behavior helpful? So I would include that. And then evaluate and revise your site. I get asked a lot, you know, how do I know if my website meets the needs of users with limited literacy skills or limited health literacy skills? And the only way to really know that is to test your site with users. And we really advocate for a user-centered design process, which again is an iterative process where you start, you know, gather your user needs, build some early prototypes, do some testing, fix it, do some more testing, launch it, do some more testing. So that's really the only way to know that your site is going to be effective. So the takeaway, Studies show that simplifying your website improves the experience of all users, not just those with limited literacy skills. And I think I'm preaching to the choir here, but we all know what it looks like to arrive to a website that has a really clean design, really simple, not a lot of clutter, easy to understand, you can print it, you can get the answer to your question. We all want websites like that, so there's really no reason we shouldn't be designing them that way. And again, here's the URL for the guide, health.gov/healthliteracyonline. I think we're doing questions at the end, yeah?